How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Willie and D-Base continuing here on 102.5 The Game. We've had a great show so far. We're going to take a break from the insane talk about the Predators, and why not? I mean, this is an exciting time in the offseason. Predators took over the talk of the league with the free agent signings they've made. The expectations level is going to be huge come fall. But other things are going on, and it is time to talk to Teron Davenport. By the way, we are continuing our show brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. And, of course, our phone and text line, as always, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Teron Davenport has been on vacation, and so he and D-Mace and Nick have been sunning it up, having a blast while I've been slaving away here at the mic. Actually, we have had a lot of fun here. There's plenty to go on and plenty to talk about. But, Teron, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, no, it's great to be back, man. I being under that sun in Cabo, I may be the same complexion as D-Mace now. I don't know. We'll have to stand next to each other and see, man.
Hey, man, I got me a lot of sun over in Europe, so it was great.
Nice.
So I'm hoping you had a wonderful time there on the beach, man. We all need it, especially right now as we enter into the football season coming up pretty much, what, in the next 3 weeks, two and a half, 3 weeks, teams report to camp. I recently saw Will Levis and, you know, clips of him throwing the wide receivers. And I know Will spoke of this. This is something that he wanted to do. Prior to them being dismissed from the OTAs. But have you spoken with him or any of the guys that are at the or were at the, let's call it, the throwing session? How did it go? Where is he at as far as, you know, building that rapport with the other receivers?
Yeah, things went really well there. I actually have a conversation with D-Hop set up soon. Things went well there. It was a good bonding experience. They had dinner, they went on a fishing trip, and you know, it was D-Hop, it was Tajay Spears, Calvin Ridley, Josh Wiley, Chig, and of course Levis. And it's funny, they were in Cabo, you know, when I was there, so it was a good time, and they it was a great experience for them, you know, from what I understand and what I was told. So that's a good thing. And as you know, from having been there and done that, that relationship with the quarterback, you know, when you're able to have that beyond just the football field, that's what allows you to be on the same page and think so much alike and be able to communicate without literally talking, communicate wise. It's just that eye, you know, looking at each other and knowing what's up.
Now, listen, I know you didn't mean to start anything, but the names that were not said, you know, Treylon Burks, guys like that were not at this throwing session. Was it just a scheduling thing? Because, you know, to me, Treylon is one of those guys. And not to say that he and Treylon hasn't thrown together since OTAs, but in a situation like that, you expect a guy like Treylon Burks, you know, to be there to help build that rapport with the quarterbacks as well as the other receivers. So was it just a scheduling thing that you know?
No, and that's a good point, and that's something, you know, when I was told who was going to be there, you know, I was surprised at Burks and also Tyler Boyd.
Tyler Boyd as well.
I will say Burks, his, you know, wife is having a baby.
Okay.
You know, not that it's coming right now, but I mean, she's coming. He has a daughter coming. But I don't know if that has something to do with it. That's beyond my knowledge. I don't know, but you would think that would be a good thing for him to attend. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say I would imagine he had a good reason not to be there.
Now, looking at this wide receiver position, you know, one guy that sort of gets left out of the talks, and we know that, listen, it's the top three guys, Boyd, Ridley, and D-Hop. And then after that, you try to figure where's, you know, Treylon going to fit in what they're trying to do as an offense. But the guy that sort of, you know, been left out of this is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been the guy that, listen, he hasn't put up big numbers, but I think he's been the most consistent since he started getting playing time here in Nashville. Again, he's not, you know, putting up 1,300 yards and he's not scoring 10 touchdowns a year. But what he's doing, what they're asking him to do, he's doing it consistently.
No doubt. No doubt. And as I'll use an analogy, my guy, Deuce Staley, you know, he was the Eagles running back coach, I remember, 2017. And he was talking about a guy that came out of Wisconsin by the name of Corey Clement. And he was like, man, he's like that. Corey Clement is like that Honda Accord in the hood. You know what I mean? And that's what Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is like. And that it's not the best looking car. It's not the most flashy car. And it's not one that you'll use to pull the ladies with. Mm-hmm. But it will always get you where you need to go.
I can tell you, Teron, you are
reliable.
It's ringing a bell for me because I had the Honda Accord. I was that guy, and I was definitely not pulling the ladies because of that.
Yeah,
that was
my
first car.
I was that guy too, man. I had an old 81 Honda Civic, you know, and it used to get me from Philly to New York all the time. It didn't pull the ladies all the time, but it got me where I needed
it
to go.
It never left me hanging on the side of the road. I'll say that.
Yeah. And that's Nick. That's NWI. Uh-huh. That's who he is, man. That's the guy. Like, he's not going to consistently make the flashy play, you know, but he's the guy that will occasionally do that. But, you know, every week on game day, when you need somebody to go down there as the gunner or to make a big play, make a catch or something like that, he's going to do it for you. And I think that's the old reliable factor that he brings. And he's pretty fun to think about, you know, because I go back to when he was a rookie, and I remember I used to joke with him. I'm like, yo, man, you got to stop getting into those physical altercations with the football. Don't fight it. You know what I mean? That's your friend. Catch it, corral it, you know, cherish it. And just seeing him go from that to where he is now, it's a good story that hasn't really been told. And, you know, I tip my cap to him.
Now, let's switch to the other side of the football, the secondary. Where do you think Roger McQuarrie fits in this? Because he, like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, whatever you ask him to do, he goes out and do it, and he's consistent at it. He isn't the biggest guy, but what he is a pit bull. And he's going to give you everything he has. And he's played very well since, you know, becoming a Tennessee Titan.
No, I definitely have to look at that with him and playing that nickel position. And not only playing as a pass defender, like, he's a very willing guy to come up and support against the run. Like, he's going to throw his body in there and mix it up. And sometimes even set the edge when he's asked to do it. And that's commendable for a guy. And, you know, you've seen him in person. He's not the most, you know, physically imposing or gifted player. You know what I mean? He's basically your average size NFL guy, but the heart that he has within him is something that, you know, is beyond the height and weight that we see on paper. So, yeah, I mean, you look at him and just what he brings to that nickel position. He's a solid defender. You know, he's one of four guys, you know, who hasn't given up a touchdown in over 100 targets or whatnot. You know, one of those other guys just happens to be Legarius Sneed as well. So, you know, you got two of the four guys that haven't done that. So I think that secondary, it definitely has improved. And, you know, it's going to be interesting watching how all that plays out.
We're talking to Teron Davenport. And, Teron, another situation people are wondering about how it's going to play out is in San Francisco. I just saw it's amazing these random clips that come up. But I saw one of Deebo Samuel absolutely going full throttle on a treadmill, which it looked a little dangerous. Like, I've seen people wipe out on the treadmill. I've wiped out on the treadmill. It's like everybody in the whole workout place stops and like, oh, are you okay? Like, I've been that guy, right? But, you know, your headphones go one way, your phone goes the other way. It's bouncing all over the place. But like, Deebo survived. But like, I'm not sure. If people are wondering, can they make this work? They spent the big money on McCaffrey. Ayuk his contract has got to be addressed, and then eventually Debo's contract's got to be addressed. So how is that going to play out?
Yeah, and, you know, the contract you didn't mention is Brock Purdy. You know, his is going to have
to be addressed. I'll tie this into our Mets love. Teron, Brock Purdy, I saw the a million tweets that you get on Bobby Bonilla Day, which was yesterday, where the Mets still – Bobby Bonilla is, what, 70 years old now or 75?
72, I think, yeah.
He got paid his annual salary of over $1 million a year, which he gets for another, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years?
2035?
2035.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
he makes more than Brock Purdy.
Yeah, well, let me say this also, because Ken Griffey Jr. is still getting paid from the Reds, and for all the, you know, the Braves fans, because I know we're in Braves country, Bruce Sutter was getting paid for quite some time also.
Yes, he was.
There's a math and a science to it. We don't have the time to get into it, but, you know, I'm not going to let people just bag on my Mets. It's just not gonna happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, there you go,
yeah,
TD.
Yeah.
Tell him.
But anyhow, you're right, though. That is a lot to work out. And, you know, talking to Rand, he said there's a guy, and I remember when I was covering the 49ers, Parag Marate, he's a wizard when it comes to cap management and just making all that stuff fit. So they're going to be fine. They're going to have to figure some things out, obviously. That treadmill, though, with Debo Samuel, I mean, he was hitting 21 miles an hour on that, you know, so he definitely was going fast. And I would imagine this is going to be a big year for him. You look at everything in the formula, right? You got Kittle who has to get his touches. But then don't forget, you know, they drafted my man Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, you know. So now you have in the first round, mind you. So there's a lot of guys that got to be fed. And, you know, Brock Purdy's going to have to get his John Stockton on, man, and just have Buku assist, because there's so many guys that have to be taken care of.
D-Mace, how do you see that playing out with those guys?
Man, it's a good problem to have. But I think first and foremost, you got to sign Ayuk back. You know, I like Debo Samuel, but eventually his body's going to start breaking down. If it hadn't started breaking down already, he's a hybrid running back receiver. The things they do with him, they can do with McCaffrey. Ayuk brings a different dimension. He's outside, inside. He's more of your true wide receiver. Now Debo's a beast, but you can only play at that. You can only play that way for so long. So to me, they got to get it solved with Ayuk. And I'm not sure if Debo is going to be there after next season. I'm really not, because you got to sign Ayuk back. You drafted Pearsall. You got to get younger at that position. Hell of a player, but you got to know playing that position at that style of play, how he plays. He's only going to be able to hold up, you know, maybe another year or two playing that matter. Now, he's a physical person, but man, oh, man, he's a running back that they split out wide that knows how to catch the football, because once he gets the football in his hands, man, he's hell trying to bring down.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. Long-term-wise, I think Debo's going to be gone. Willie, when you asked the question, I thought you were talking about for this year.
Oh, no, not necessarily. I think long-term. Because Purdy, you have to enjoy the fact when you have the quarterback still making less than Bobby Bonilla just got paid.
Yeah, yeah, you know. And I'll say this, too. Keep an eye on the George Kittle situation. You know, he just happens to live here in Nashville, so. You know, you never know what could happen.
Wow. That is something to think about. He does make some serious appearances on the Jumbotron at Predators games. That's for sure. He's not shy. Most people know this if you listen to our show, but he is very close friends with Philip Forsberg, who is locked in long-term here. Their wives are really good friends. He lives here in the off-season. Boy, wouldn't that be something if that ever came into play.
Now, TD, how do you think this, now that we've gotten through sort of this wave of the draft and free agency and then OTAs, so every team now is pretty much holding their breath, hoping that none of their players get hurt in their workouts or anything else, but how do you realistically see the AFC South now that sort of everything is in place? You know, teams are pretty much set going into camp. Now, there may be some guys that they're going to add here and there, but we know for the most part, there's no big-name guys coming into nobody's locker room at this point in time. So as the rosters are set right now. How do you see the AFC South?
Yeah, I think, look, you have to look at the Texans and say that they're the team to beat. They're coming off a division title. And also, you look at the additions they made. I mean, everything is pointing up for them. And you take Azeez Ansari, you take Danico Autry off the Titans and put them on the Texans. I mean, that's just – and I know the Titans made some good moves in the offseason, but I think Houston is the team to beat, not to mention, you know, adding Stephon Diggs and Danielle Hunter. And they lost Jonathan Greenard, but still, you know, Danielle Hunter is a premium pass rusher. So – I would say the Texans, and then it's just a mix. There's every roster has question marks, right? Jacksonville, I think you got a question, like, you know, their heart, the way they collapsed down the stretch last year, and just, you know, some of the things that happened with them. And then I think you look at the Colts, and they just say, okay, will Anthony Richardson stay healthy? You know, is that something that's going to happen? And the Titans, you know, Will Levis is everything. All things are pointing to, hey, man, this is going to be the franchise guy, but we don't know if he's going to be the franchise guy. And if he doesn't, then that organization is in trouble. So the sure shot, the team that has the best chance is clearly the Texans. But, you know, that's why you play the game, right? And you never have paper champions be the actual champion. You rarely do. We'll put it that way.
Now, two quarterbacks that I am truly going to be paying attention to in AFC South, and – when I say these two quarterbacks, don't think I'm comparing them as far as their ability to play the game, but I'm comparing them because they're both going to have the same problems, I think, as the season goes on. C.J. Stroud and Will Levis. I'm not comparing them as far as play style because I think C.J. Stroud is, you know, he's above Will Levis, but I say they're going to have the same problem because of the receiver room, getting guys to football. You see what Nico Collins was able to do last year. He's the number one guy, but then you bring in Stephon Diggs, who has been a number one guy for pretty much his whole career. And then you had the young guy that got hurt, Tank Dell. He was playing phenomenal before he got hurt. Now all three of these guys are here. They're healthy. How do you, as a quarterback, how do you distribute the football and keep everybody healthy? And I compare Will Levis because it's the same thing. You got Calvin Ridley, who's your number one now. You have DJ, you have Hopkins, and then you have Tyler Boyd. So to me, how do you figure this out as a quarterback, the distribution, keeping everybody happy? That's why I say C.J. Stroud and Will Levis both have sort of the same problems in their offense. How do I keep these playmakers happy?
Yeah, and that's the big thing. And you look, you can take it a step further with the Texans. You know, Dalton Schultz is a pretty established pass catcher, and we know that Josh Wiley and Chiga Conquo combo, there's going to be expectations there. And I think this is where Will Levis, he really would be smart to rely on his resources. And Ryan Tannehill, I would talk to him a lot about how, you know, he was able to find that success. That year they had a 2,000-yard rusher. They had a 1,000-yard receiver, 16 yards short of another one. And, you know, Jonnu Smith had 700 to 800 yards. It was all about, and talking to the receiver coach at the time, Rob Moore, what they loved about Tannehill was he didn't see numbers on a jersey. He just saw who was open. And whoever was open, that's who we got the ball to. And if I was Will Levis, my answer would be, you know, when you come to me, hey, listen, get open and I'll find you. And just kind of leave it at that. And that's really what it comes down to. And that's what Tannehill did, and that's what they loved about him. So I would adopt that same mindset. And we know from watching last year, like, there were times where it was like, you know what? You only live once. DeAndre Hopkins is down there. Let me just throw it. And, you know, they came up with big plays, but I think – he could get away from that this year because there is an assortment of guys to throw the ball to.
Looking forward to when things crank back up here soon. And, Teron, I'm also looking forward to Saturday because that's when Edwin Diaz is eligible to come back, and my stomach can't take a whole lot more. I feel like I'm getting air sick when the plane gets all turbulent. Some of these relievers the Mets are throwing out there, it is getting hairy. But we're surviving. Yeah. We're surviving. One game at a time. Yeah. Four more games to go.
It is a mess, but I'll say this. If you remember, first started talking about the baby Mets, and the guy that I kept saying,
yes,
was watch out for, Mark Vientos. And, you know, he's continuing to just make me,
he's
make me proud. I'm sitting here with my arms crossed and a big smile like a proud pop. I'll say.
You said, Teron did this. I know exactly where we were, too. We were at Titans training camp, and he was saying, I was talking about these other guys, and he was saying, watch out for Mark Vientos. He is the guy that has blossomed here. So it is nice to see some good young youth talent getting in there. So, Teron, we've had our Mets moment, as we do every week. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a great 4th of July, and we'll talk to you soon.
For sure. Appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
All right. Teron Davenport, ESPN.com, and, of course, you hear him all over our station, has the best when it comes to Titans discussion. Always great coverage of the Titans. Speaking of great football talk, we're going back-to-back today. Tim Hasselbeck, he's got his schedule. Of course, this is 4th of July week. We're getting all the best stuff in three shows. So Tim will join us. We had to actually punt Tim last week after the Soros story went nuts. So that almost never happens. But so Tim is nice enough to join us at 1:30. That's coming up in a couple minutes, so stick around. Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, talking with Tim next.
I'm bringing Hasselbeck.
Get your sexy on.
I hope you're ready. Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on 102.5 The Game. Great to catch up with him. Willie Donegan, Derek Mason here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Tim, let's start it here just because, you know, it's kind of loose in the summer. If I were to ask you, you know, when you walk into your team meeting or when you bump into your players during this time of the year, how many of them would maybe bring up to you, hey, did you see what the Predators did yesterday with the free agent craziness that took place? What percentage of your team might follow the Predators with any kind of level like that?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest, like in terms of how dialed into hockey.
Yeah, because they obviously created a huge buzz throughout the league yesterday. Mm-hmm. With a huge binge of free agent signings of heavy name players like Steven Stamkos. I don't know what the equivalent would be, D-Mace, in a football, but that's like that would be like signing a Deebo Samuel or, you know, somebody like that, a huge accomplished player. You know, it's some people made the reference of Tom Brady going from the Patriots to the Buccaneers. It was that kind of thing on the hockey level. Now, obviously, it doesn't have the same spotlight, but I'm just curious of if that makes it into your circles
circles. You know what's interesting is, so my brother Matthew's daughter, Mallory, who's a student athlete at Boston College, she plays lacrosse at Boston College. They just won a national championship. Like, she's super dialed into sports, all that stuff. She has a summer internship with the Preds. And we were somewhere yesterday, and she's like, her phone is blowing up with all of her friends and just people that she knows and things like that, like that are like, oh my gosh, like Preds are going crazy today. Preds are going crazy today. So like all day yesterday, she's, you know, communicating about all of their moves and everything like that. And so, so I would say like, maybe I'm underestimating, you know, the reach, just knowing like what her interaction was yesterday with, and I'm talking about like friends from Boston, you know, that are hockey fans, college hockey fans, you know, that are, you know, seeing players that they know, you know, get signed or drafted. And so I think that, you know, maybe I'm underestimating it. You know, maybe it's the kind of that summertime, you know, fog a bit of a lull sports wise, but yeah, like, look, I do think that, you know, maybe I think the casual fan even got reached. That's probably the best way for me to say it.
We talked with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, I don't know if you've been following this whole NFL lawsuit that has gone on, where the NFL has to repay billions of dollars. If you have, how do you believe it, you know, and I'm sure you've talked with people if you have really dove into this, how do you think this affects the NFL moving forward, that this lawsuit was out there and they lost the lawsuit? Now, I think each team has to pay back X amount of dollars, to sort of settle the lawsuit. But how do you think this affects the NFL moving forward?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, and I followed it, D-Mace, mm-hmm. but like I'm a little bit like, I think it happens a lot of times in, some of these off the field, storylines in terms of, whether it's an ownership group bidding on a team and who's part of it. Like, I probably, like most fans, eventually tire of it, right? So like it's really interesting at first, and then all of a sudden it drags on a little bit, and I think sometimes the interest can wane. And so I think that I've felt like that following the story. How do I think it affects the NFL going forward? I think it's breaking trust, mm-hmm. right? Like I think ultimately, fans are generally smart enough. And I think that when people look around and they think, like, what does it cost for me to watch NFL football games? And they realize, like, what they are spending in order to see as many NFL games as they can. And then you find information out where you're like, wait a second. Like, I could have been watching these games and all of these games, no matter what market I was in, for a fraction of the price that I've been getting charged for it. Like, I just think it starts to break trust. Now, does that mean that people won't tune in? I think for some it will, but I think, ultimately people love watching football. It's such, it's baked into our culture. But I do think that, eventually you just, you stop believing and you stop trusting the National Football League.
Yeah, so and I can say that the NFL is sort of one of those companies that is recession-proof or lawsuit-proof, that no matter what happens, they are still going to survive. Why? Because we love the NFL so much that even if they do lose a, billion-plus dollar lawsuit, they're still going to be able to survive and not just survive, but they're going to still rack in money like an ATM machine.
I mean, D-Mace, your point about it being recession-proof, like there's nothing that proved that more than the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it changed the way we live. It's going to change the way we live for a decade. And the NFL is like, yeah, that's cool. That's cute. Okay, that's great, but we're not giving up. We have so much influence in powerful cities, and we generate so much money in all these economies, and so here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep playing because we're going to get our TV money, and so, we are not playing. And listen, college football was kind of recession-proof, mm-hmm. but some of those conferences didn't play, whereas, the NFL was like, yeah, that's funny, but, we're playing. Right. Bubble. No, we're not doing a bubble. We're not doing that. We're playing football. We're getting our TV money. We are completely recession proof. And honestly, we just have so much influence, in terms of every local government, every state government, that we're really going to do whatever we want.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems that way. Another question here. The quarterbacks. Obviously, the AAVs are going up astronomical. I think I saw, they were doing a comparison to quarterbacks, what they made 15 years ago. We talk about top quarterbacks compared to what the guys are making now. And it's damn near, if not double, close to triple. Do you see it stopping? Because as we go, Dak Prescott is next. You have other quarterbacks that are in line for these huge contracts. I know we had a few signed, Lawrence, guys like that. But now some of these big contracts are really coming up. Do you think there's going to be a cap on the number of what a quarterback can make? Because, listen, in 5-10 years, we're going to see, if not, we're going to see a $70 million quarterback.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be, because we're going to continue to see the cap grow,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, the reality, too, is in terms of the revenue that the NFL is going to continue to generate, especially with legalized gambling, the cap is going up. It's just going to continue to rise. It is. TV money's not going anywhere. There's different avenues in terms of streaming. They're capturing you know, more eyeballs in terms of the audience, especially, you know, overseas, all that stuff. And so the thing I would say is, like, I don't. And then, you know, as the quarterbacks, you know, salaries have gone up, I think we also need to recognize that alongside that, the rules have changed, right? And so, like, quarterbacks are going to play, because of the rules, they're going to play longer than they did before. Whereas, like, a running back's lifespan hasn't changed. A corner's lifespan hasn't changed. A safety's lifespan, you know, in terms of, like, playing at a high level, hasn't changed. But quarterback has. Look, Troy Aikman retired. Like, it was concussions and a back injury. You know, Steve Young, I can still see the hit, you know, Aeneas Williams, you know, put on him in a football game. Like the reality is like, you can't do that anymore. And so now, like, Drew Brees plays till he's 40, and you know, Brady and Manning and Aaron Rodgers, and, like, Kirk Cousins is 37 years old. Like, so in the change of the rules, now, like, how long somebody lasts and play at a high level at quarterback, that also has just been skewed. Like it that's grown at a different rate. And so I think that's a part of the reason why more organizations are comfortable saying, like, yeah, we'll invest in you, because you might not be an 8-year player. Like, you could be a 15-year player for us.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, before we let you go, this is a tricky question, but it's I want to try to keep it somewhat generic, but I'm going to ask you about John Gruden. And like we were talking about with the other lawsuit, I'm not into all the legalese about it. Sure. I'm not going through pages and pages trying to figure out exactly what's happening. But I think about this in a broader sense. John Gruden was once a pretty darn good coach and a really good announcer. Yeah. And he has been on the sideline, and we know why, right? He made, let's just put it in a big broad box, he made some mistakes that have cost him. And at some point, I think that it's fair to ask, has he paid his price? Can he get back into doing a job that he was really good at, whether it's a coach or maybe in the booth someday? Hockey is struggling with this right now with Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville, who have been suspended for a long time, and rightfully so. They had to pay a penalty for a mistake they made with something that happened, and hockey was a big story. But, you know, after a certain amount of time, it's like Michael Vick. Eventually, people said, you know what, he paid a big price, but he shouldn't be banned for life. What do you think would happen with Gruden here? Do you think at some point he will get back into the football world?
I do, and I just think the appetite for forgiveness is way more likely, you know, coaching again than being on TV, right? Like, I just, you know, I think that, like, to your point, like, Michael Vick, you know, he kind of, you know, like, you just think about, you know, he goes to jail, comes back, he's playing football, like, now he's on TV, right? You know? I don't think that there's an appetite for that in terms of Gruden. And look, I think there are a lot of people that have, I think, as you said, it was probably a good way to say it, just, you know, made mistakes, right? And done things that they wish that they hadn't. I think for Gruden, I mean, look, there are coaches that have, you know, guys that have, you know, DUIs that, like, didn't sit out at all. You know?
Right.
And so, it's interesting, because I do think that John Gruden is somebody that, you know, had a significant impact on the National Football League. Right? Like, I think there are some coaches where you can look at them and say, man, like, they just had, like, yeah, they were successful as a coach, but they also had, you know, a very unique impact on the game. Like, I think you could say the same for coaches like Bill Walsh or Joe Gibbs or Bill Parcells and Sean Payton and, you know, obviously Bill Belichick. Like, there are Pete Carroll. Like, there are coaches that you're like, you know, they definitely made an impact on the National Football League, whether it was X's and O's or, you know, how they related to players, whatever it may be. And, like, Gruden fits in that box. Like, he absolutely does. And so, and none of the guys that I mentioned are perfect. So,
right. Like, for example, Payton had to sit out. He was suspended. And he had to work his way back in. And so every case is different, right, depending on the circumstances. But I do think it's sometimes I think you have a really strong public push by some people who have said, this guy should never coach again or whatever, right? But at some point, I think we have to look at it when a certain amount of time has gone by.
No, no doubt. I mean, think about Greg Williams.
Yes.
You know, Greg Williams, and I think part of the reason there was never really an appetite for Greg Williams to get back in is just, you know, he kind of had a bit of an abrasive personality, probably wasn't, you know, always great with certain media members and, you know, probably represented himself in a way that came across as kind of a high ego guy and those types of things. And so when it comes time to, you know, I guess hoping for some forgiveness or people to say, you know, give him some grace as he gets back in, like it just wasn't there. Like it didn't exist. Whereas I think that whether it's somebody that's not as high profile or whether it's somebody that, you know, has a lot of allies, you know, in the media world or, you know, that type of thing, then yeah, I think it had an influence. And to be honest, in some ways it's no different than Hall of Fame voting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like think about Terrell Owens. Like what? Like that's crazy, you know, to think that he went through what he went through in terms of Hall of Fame. And then there's other people that weren't nearly as good of players, but, you know, were fantastic in terms of building relationships in their local media. And look at how that impacted that voting.
It's a broad topic for sure. We're out of time for now. But, Tim, great to catch up with you. Have a great 4th of July weekend with your family, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on 102.5 The Game. We're back to wrap up the show here in just a moment. We'll look ahead to Stillman and Company. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Coming down the home stretch here on Willie and D-Mace. Got a little Saturday Night Fever going to end up the show. Do you think Jared knows this song, D-Mace?
I think he does.
Think he does?
I think he does. I think he has to.
I think he's with it when it comes to the Tramps. This song never fails to pop up somewhere, right? Somewhere.
Somebody's
in your
playing
near
it.
Future, this song is going to pop up, and people will be moving on the dance floor, for sure. Hey, the Sounds will be getting after it tonight as well. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan, as it'll be the Sounds and the Memphis Redbirds. You got to love that. Pre-game at 6:50. Sounds playing some pretty good ball lately. They won last night. And, of course, Nick being a Cardinal fan, he might be paying a little extra attention to the Redbirds when they're playing the Sounds.
Indeed.
Cardinals-Mets battling for the wild card. Just saying. First pitch at 7:05. Coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Okay. D-Mace, you brought up a really interesting question. I've been meaning to bring this topic up, but the hockey stuff is kind of...
Take precedence.
It's been taking precedence. But the lawsuit that's going on with the Sunday ticket, you know, all of the legal battles, and it's being appealed by the NFL, and we're talking about a lot of money that was awarded to the people, basically.
$4.7 billion.
That's a lot of coin.
Residential class damages and $96 million in commercial class damages. Whew, that's a lot of money.
But this is one thing I thought of while this was going on, and that is what should the Sunday ticket be worth? Because on one hand, you're like, this is America. If you don't like the price, just don't pay it. And, you know, that's your decision. You can charge kind of whatever you want. But that's sort of the essence of this lawsuit, is they've been overcharging people for this, and especially from a sports bar perspective. I have purchased the NFL Sunday ticket some seasons, and then other seasons I pass on it. And the NFL, this is what they kind of say, is like, we're keeping it free. You know, every Sunday, you don't have to have cable, and you can see a game at noon, and you can see a game at 3, and then you can see a game at 7. You get three games every Sunday, so what more do you... We're going to make this other package a premium package to protect the rights holders that keep the games free for you. So I get both sides of it. I'm not enough... I mean, we'll let the judge and the jury decide how this pans out. But it kind of gets me wondering, like, what should it be worth? The NFL Sunday ticket. Like, because we're in a world now with podcasts and everything. If you are a hardcore St. Louis sports person living in Nashville, you don't have to listen to us. You can go on your phone and get St. Louis sports all day, every day, and listen to the local stations out of St. Louis. You couldn't do that 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, whatever city you live in, you can follow your team. You buy the Sunday ticket package.
Yeah.
You watch your team every week, and you might as well be in your old hometown.
Yeah, but people want it to be back the way it used to be, man, where you could just flip on a channel, 2, 4, yeah, 7, whatever, and you can see different teams play. You didn't have to buy a package to watch different teams, play, especially, your home team. Because sometimes, some places,
they protect the local territory.
Absolutely.
Right?
So, I mean, is it too much to pay each and every year? I mean, if you are a football enthusiast, then you don't think about it. I just want to watch football. But if you are a person that sort of, likes football some,
you
take what's on, you feel that, maybe I am getting charged too much. Maybe it should be set up different. I don't know.
I really see it from a sports bar's perspective, mm-hmm, from the business, that what you get charged to have that service is important, because I know as a patron, uh-huh, on a Sunday, if I'm going out somewhere to eat.
Yeah, you want to be able
to
watch all games.
Do you have the games on?
Yeah.
Do you have all the games on? Because I want to watch the games. Mm-hmm. And I want to watch a particular game. And if I don't get it, I'm going to go to a place that does have it. Mm-hmm. So I think the sports bar part of this might be different than what's in your living room. But at the same time, we're now conditioned. If you're a diehard Patriots fan, mm-hmm, living in Nashville, you want to be able to watch the Patriots every week.
So you got
to
buy it.
Yeah. So what's a fair price is what it comes down to.
I don't know what it cost.
I mean, some people would say, well, that's not that much money. But other people would say, well, no, I got a tight budget, man. I can't afford to pay.
Well, it's Sunday ticket because, let me see, I'm trying to figure out because Sunday ticket is different from – the red zone is different from Sunday ticket, right?
Yeah,
or the red zone was the Sunday – or is the Sunday ticket sort of?
I've seen it where in order to get the red zone, you have to get the Sunday ticket. Or you might have a separate price to buy the red zone. And the red zone, that's a phenomenon too.
Yeah.
You could sit there and you look at your watch and you're like, man, I've been sitting on this couch for 2 straight hours.
Exactly. Just
watching
everything.
The red zone.
Yeah.
I haven't moved because there's no commercials or anything.
Exactly. You just go from one game
crazy
to the other. It just picks up as it doesn't go into a commercial sort of type of thing.
I think
it
the
just
first
picks
couple
up everything.
First couple years maybe they gave it to you, and now you, I think it's part of a package you have to buy, right? You don't just get the red zone with regular cable.
I don't know how it works.
Maybe
I need
to see
the
sports package, I believe.
Yeah. I think.
So that's red zone, NFL package, all of that's together. So I wonder how much that runs. It has to be over $100.
Oh, it is. I
know red zone and NFL Network, if you have like, I think Xfinity, that's part of like the sports package. I think Sunday tickets by itself. That's with YouTube TV. That's by itself.
Okay.
And recently, YouTube TV just got the rights to be able to put it exclusively on their thing. Although I think,
I know
Can you still get it on DirecTV? I think you can.
That's for restaurants, I believe. It's like more of the wholesale style because the restaurants have multiple televisions.
Yeah, I don't think DirecTV you get. Can you get Red Zone?
No, I think it's just solely for restaurants.
Oh, yeah, okay. You used to.
For a while, DirecTV had the exclusive rights.
So you had to get it. So it's an ongoing thing. I know if I'm an owner and I just saw this case go down, I'm like, wait a minute.
So I gotta pay how much? So
what
does that mean? All of us get checks of probably $5 or something like that.
I'm wondering. I said 50.
I did it for one season. I got $50 back. That's all I ask.
Did you? Oh yeah. Just give me $50 back.
College discount.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
I take $50.
Better than nothing.
I'm $50 richer if they give it to me.
Better than nothing.
I take that.
All right, we're out of here. D-Mace and I will be back on the show tomorrow, our final show before the 4th of July weekend festivities begin. So we'll have a lot of fun. Jonathan Marchessault is going to face the media tomorrow. We will have Jonathan Hutton. We might have another interview or two up our sleeve, so make sure you tune in. And Stillman & Company is coming up next.
Be love and love of your people. Happy Tuesday and peace.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.